Intertextual Cardboard Experience.
Hello and welcome to Intertextual Cardboard Experience, where we're really excited to have a it's just me, but you knew that already. You saw the title. I can't pull any fast ones on you. But it is me, which I think naturally has me start with like the apologies and stuff, but today the apologies are a mixed bag of sorts because I always want to have guests. That's kind of the point of this show. I think diving into some of the process and also just kind of like getting some of these thoughts out or working on playing particular games for these solo shows, which I think wind up going into the guest episodes as well, has some value. Hopefully it has value for you. I know that sometimes they can go a little bit longer than anticipated, so I guess that's the apology. If you want to hear other people that are talking that aren't just me, then you're stuck with a bit of rambling, but that's the extent of the apology. I think there's good stuff in all of them. Perhaps a little bit too much, or I could have found ways to condense them, but in this form of media, that's what you're getting. And that said, enough of that. We'll get on with it because I actually do think this one will be pretty short. And usually this is the part where I retroactively go and be like, oh, yep, nope, that was like an hour and a half. It's not going to happen. Like, it's just not. You're going to see the time when it's all said and done, and you'll be like, okay, he's not a liar. So we'll see what we can do. But again, there's not a ton, just some thoughts. So, some of the idea here is about like channel updates. Obviously the goal, like I just said, is to have people on consistently at the start. Having that bi-weekly guest setup was going really strong. It was working better with just kind of my schedule, with how I was doing in all aspects, and things just lined up really well too with guests, where kind of that communication just always fell into place, and combination of some things like personally, like throwing in delays, and just some people that I've been working with and talking to, and have things planned in the future for as well, just like they haven't happened. And I guess that's kind of life, and that's all good. Part of it too is just some other things that I have been working on for board games and the channel of sorts. So, some of the what's to come, awesome guests, that's what this is about. Kind of like a shift to a potential shift to a couple of local things / interviews. So TBD, and those are things that I'm really excited for. Some videos. I have repeatedly said that I don't really do reviews. I don't think I know how to do a proper review, so to say. So these will be maybe review adjacent and or video essay types of things, but just explorations more so than anything. And at least the first few that I have been like working on and storyboarding and all that, like, I'm really excited for, but those need quite a bit of work. So TBD on that. And the one thing that has been taking up a ton of time is just my work and planning on a game that I've been designing. And that's something that I, well, hopefully in one of the videos, we'll be able to talk about a lot more very soon. And and again, hopefully in that video format. But just I going back to some of the episodes where I talked to various artists and graphic designers and everything like that, at least once it popped up that I had done some art in the past. I wouldn't really deem myself super talented in the art department, but it's something that I've always enjoyed, alongside my love of writing. That's definitely the creative outlet that I have enjoyed the most. But I like creating physical art, and making this game was a really good kind of like excuse or reason to dive back into that. So, not saying that I didn't get help. There's actually a good handful of people that helped me out with just advice and looked over the work in rule books and cards and everything like that. But in terms of the creation of the cards, making the art, struggling to learn graphic design and photo editing programs and everything like that, I think I made something that's pretty cool, and I'm excited to talk about that. But that's taken up more time and more of my kind of like brain space as well. And I guess just another excuse, and this is only tying into the title, because there's really not much procrastination, I don't think, going on. But I like the title, Fear and Procrastination, because one of the things is going to be talking about fear. I'll drop the first quote unquote, hopefully the first one right there, in board games, and the idea of procrastination. And, to me, I don't think anything's really been procrastinated. I said some of the scheduling things, and I've been working on other things. And honestly, I fell into like a bit of a spell where I was just binging online board games at in Board Game Arena. So when I did that solo-ish episode where I had that asynchronous interview with Board Game Arena developer UFM, I fell down a rabbit hole, and I kind of lost, not necessarily, motivation or will or desire, but I just didn't balance my physical game playing well. And I think that stunted some of my progress or process in reaching out to particular people too. But recently, kind of hop back into it a little more. I mean, I definitely was playing probably more than like the average human in terms of board game, a good 5-10 physical games a month in that range, something like that. But compared to the like 100 or something that I was playing in August on Board Game Arena, and 70 in September, or whatever the dates are, whatever the months are, it wasn't the same amount. So I got kind of back to it, really enjoying having more games back on the table, and some of them are ones I'm going to be talking about today in this episode, diving into the idea of fear a bit. Okay, what's a great solo episode without trying to entice people to keep listening with a giveaway? I feel like the kind of overall success of the giveaways has varied. I think some of the things I've given out have been really cool. I did the first one was probably the best, like syncing up a couple listeners' tastes in their collection that wound up like being the winners, and sending a couple games out in that way. But that was definitely, I think, the neatest one. The other ones have been not met, and I probably just don't explain that process the best. So I'm gonna say it now. I guess I'll go more into it at the very end as a reminder, but it's going to be in a Google form. It's not going to be the same one, So if you're like, I filled out a Google form in the past, I don't want to fill out this one for the sake of a giveaway. It's going to be different. The questions are going to be different. It's going to be shorter. And it's not really like a feedback thing. It's just potentially for another episode. And it is a surprise giveaway, but I think the prize here is really cool. Perhaps the coolest one that I have yet. So just trust me on that. And I'll give a few more details at the end. And kind of, well, I've got a just the quickest of plugs in here. Maybe another one coming later. We'll see. And if you listen to this, whatever you listen on, just liking it would mean the absolute world to me. If you want to write a review, that would make me happy as well. So if you're listening on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and I know that there's some other ones that are kind of getting bigger, which is cool. So if you drop a rating and leave some kind words, that would be beyond appreciated, especially for the sake of having these awesome guests on. I think those episodes are really great. Okay, so we're already on to the main topic though. And the main topic here is that idea of fear and board games and kind of four solo games. Two of them I'm clumping together in a weird way. I think they all kind of transition pretty well too. But before we do that, let's talk about some main fears in board games. So I have having your shelf of unplayed games collapse on you, being attacked by the shrink wrap of those aforementioned unplayed games, when pizza is the main entree at game night and nobody grabbed a napkin, 40 plus page rule books, planning a game for a particular player count and have people fall through. Reaching for fate tokens in the or mythos tokens in the mythos bag for Arkham Horror, LCG, and having your hand eaten by Cthulhu. Okay, I don't think that's the real one. And honestly, none of those are real fears. I think that idea of like fear and horror in board games has been explored. I've heard people talk about it, reviews, other podcast episodes, so on and so forth. And I guess I'm throwing my hat in the ring, so to say, on the topic. But I'm somebody who is deeply afraid of so many things. I can't really hide my fear much. I wear it on my sleeves. Like horror films, even if they're not particularly scary, I'm curled up. I got the pillow, holding it, gripping it, putting it over my eyes for half the movie. Just kind of that type. Any video game, I even games that I don't think are supposed to be super jumpy, I'm on edge. I think playing, the Last of Us games are 20, 30-hour games, but and I like both of them quite a bit, but getting through them took so long because I would just have to walk away for so long and just regroup and build up that mental energy and in order to keep playing, despite like the fact that I liked it too. But I think I have a pretty strong imagination, so those things like live on in my head. And I guess that's like one of the things that board games can do, is if you walk away from maybe one of these things that I'm talking about and you think about the setting, the implications, the actions a bit, that's fear. That's definitely working on you in more ways than one. But I guess the moment to moment of the play experience is different. So before I talk about the soloing solo fear inducing games, I think, the thing with me that definitely, and I don't even have a ton of experience with this genre, a little bit, that induces like something that I would put alongside fear or anxiety would be something like a hidden movement type of game. And that can vary as well depending on the type. But I've played a little bit of Mind Management. I really like that game. I definitely want to play it more. And I've played it at 1, 2, and 3. And at 1 and 2, I at 2, especially, there's that kind of cat and mouse trying to find the other character. Honestly, it's been a minute since I played that, so my apologies for less than clear terms. And that is there, that is tangible. But I do recall one of my earlier plays with 3, and just some of that anxiety or that the dynamic of hearing the other two people talk about not trying to find me, and just listening them convince each other ultimately out of like going to the spot where I was or doing something that would wind up finding me. It was really late game. I don't think I'd ever been like more sweaty palmed and jittery, and there's a 50% chance that I was, hopped up on too much caffeine because, well, there's probably a 50% chance that that's the case at any point in time, which probably didn't help with all of those, physical things going on. But I don't know. It was just really great. It was something that I hadn't felt in that way in playing a board game before, and I played, a good chunk of board games. I think social deduction games, again, maybe not a genre of game that I have the most experience in, but I've played at least 4 or 5 different ones. You can get moments like that. I haven't played Blood on the Clock Tower, and that's one that I had really been itching to play. I guess that goes to the point of planning a game for a particular player count and having the fall through. But some of the ones that have some of those more short term like payoffs and reveals of who's who, you can get those moments, but it didn't feel exactly the same to me. So I think that's kind of what I have for my overall or my high level thoughts for fear in board games. And now we're on to 3 potentially scary solo games and just some of my thoughts on them. They, spoiler, I am a big fan of all of them. And I know that I'm going to wind up complaining about components more than I want to or need to, but it kind of actually ties into a previous thing that I was talking about, so it'll make sense when they get there. And here we go. The first game I'm going to talk about is Final Girl, designed by AJ Porfirio. And the one that I most recently played was the Panic at Station 2891, which had the artist Roland McDonald. And I know that there are other artists, and if I'm not mistaken, I know that there are other designers for different scenarios and things like that too. But I'm going to try to be a little bit better with my accreditation, giving credit. So I will try to keep myself accountable for that because I know that's really important. And that's one of the things that I personally like value, but I know that I don't say enough. So that out of the way, I have only played Final Girl a couple of times now, most recently within the last couple of days too, and that was after quite a break. So maybe maybe a year. Yeah, I think it's been a good year since I played it last. And as I just said, I really like this game. I'll start off with my negative, and that's kind of like a negative, not just for this game, but I think it's going to pop up in the next couple segments as well. And that's where, some of the novelty of, and the ability to mix and match scenarios and just have like a standalone scenario and everything like that. Well, it's like cool. I think one of the things that I and run into, or personally am running into, that I know others run into as well, is just that idea of simplicity. So it's like, okay, yeah, this would be simple. I can pull out the scenario. I don't have to mix and match. I don't have to do anything else. But like I said, it's been a year. This setup in particular, I think, was more confusing than the last one that I did. The last one was kind of like the villagers one, and the rules were a little more wonky. But I, grabbed the core box. I grabbed my mat sets, which I think the player mats, the neoprene mats, help quite a bit in terms of like organization and setup too. And then, I'm looking for the characters, and I'm like, oh, okay, I have this in the cast and crew box. So then I go grab a cast and crew box. So now I have, four boxes, which I'd spent like a good amount of time organizing this stuff initially, and then still have to like repunch because it's like my first one in the Station 2891 box, like new components for that. So now got like a million different things out and about. And I could make this complaint for a lot of different games or systems, but the idea of separating like deluxe components or these little upgrades, like a Kickstarter bonus or whatever it is, from the basic ones, I depending on what it is, I have an absurd amount of plain plastic non-poker chips from my Chip Theory games, and that kind of goes into a whole nother thing in just a minute. And those are easy to separate. I can toss those in a spot and be like, hey, this will be nice to prototype with or have as a component for something or whatever that might be. But when it's just like two of the same pieces, yeah, I could separate it out. This could 100% be a me problem. But like, where am I going to put it? What if I want to sell it? I don't know. It's probably overthinking it, but again, you just got a bit of a component stew out there. And like I said, I think this scenario, and I've only played two of the five. I have the Season 2 set. Themes on the more kind of like complicated side for a little bit of the admin stuff and the setup. So, I was like setting up stuff in one spot and then I got it wrong and yada yada. But once we got to the game, yeah, so that okay. So before we get into getting the game part, I don't think that a game like this is necessarily has to be a lifestyle game. And one could deem a lifestyle game however they want, but I think when you have a box, and in this case just a Season 2 box that has all these smaller boxes making it up, and it takes up a big chunk of space, there is some kind of like inherent lifestyle ness to it. It's taking up a good physical chunk of your life. But from an overall complexity, I think the back to the pros, I think the rule book on the whole is really good in learning the game and getting the flow, and the action stuff is really straightforward. And I just, again, I just like the game, but mix in some ambiguities, mix in the fact that it took me quite a bit longer getting this back onto the table and getting it ready to play than I necessarily expected. I think that is a problem for games and gamers, especially if you're not feeling the most motivated, especially if you're feeling a little crunch for time or whatever the reason might be. And yeah, that this would go away if I were to pull that out, Final Girl out in a different scenario today, it'd go so much quicker. But in that way, then have to kind of punch some of these repeat plays pretty close to each other. But yeah, let's talk about the game itself. And there's really not much I was going to talk about outside of the fact that I had a whole bunch of setup and a game. I think I took an appropriate amount of time, but things spiraled out of control really soon. So if you don't want to hear any spoilers about this scenario or this combination of the organism and the location of station 2891, you can skip ahead. I don't feel like it's going to be turbo spoilery, but on the whole, luck was not on my side, and I'm good with that. I really don't mind being unlucky. I don't mind losing in a cooperative, solo, competitive game, especially like when it's in person, and that's a whole different talk. It just doesn't really mean much. I'm here for the experience, and the experience was pretty ridiculously good. I guess I just didn't even initially know how bad my luck had been, because when you set up the game, you take these terror cards from both the location and from the villain, and you mix them up. And if I'm not mistaken, I want to say that in this case, I don't know if that's all the case, there were definitely more from the organism than there was from Station 2891. And that would mean that having these kind of like back-to-back scenarios or terror cards from Station 2891 would then be less. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the odds then weren't so much not in my favor. But I, again, here's the little spoiler. There's like a funny sequence where just by happenstance, there are a ton of victims out in the handful of the outside spaces. The building inside was more or less empty. There's a few in there. There are a couple of these like affected victims, the ones that could turn into the organisms and all that. And they were mostly inside. So I had all these regular victims outside, and they got frostbite. But on the card that they got frostbite on, it said during upkeep, they keep their frostbite, they don't lose their frostbite. And then on the next turn, there was another card that gave them all frostbite again. Essentially, not essentially, it killed like eight victims, completely spiraling out of control, because the one affected victim that I looked into had a 33% chance of being infected or having the test results come up in the way that it would turn into one of the villains, and it did. So I got to have the worst effect of that kind of like terror track trigger and trigger and trigger, and it was a nightmare in a funny way. So to me, I think thinking about this game from like the scary or the fear standpoint, like I really didn't have any fear that anything was going to go wrong in the game, because I think the worse it goes, kind of the funnier, kind of like that slapstickness to it or non actually scary stuff. But all the stuff, I mean, eight people getting double frostbite and I won't spoil all the other cards in there, but yeah, I don't know. It's pretty messed up. I'm glad that I kind of struggled through some of the setup issues that I had, and I know that some of those were self-caused, especially in that gap in time, because getting to it was a real treat. Overall, for sure. So one of the things that this kind of had me think about too, in terms of like modularity, in terms of just being able to like plug and play a map or whatever, is Cthulhu Death May Die. And I think the interesting thing here is, well, first off, this was one that I hadn't played recently solo, and that's because I played it two or three times solo, and I like the game. And the arc and overall feel for something like this compared to Final Girl, there are a lot of similarities, but there are a lot of places where the diverges doesn't follow that same path. And I think, at least from my recollection, the implementation of, grabbing a scenario, grabbing a bad character, was a little bit simpler in Cthulhu Death May Die. Storage, Seamon craziness aside, in there too, still wasn't super bad. But this is one where, despite enjoying it solo, I keep kind of holding out for the desire to play it with more people. I know there's plenty of people that I know that I would like to play this with, and I know would enjoy it as well. And I think, in Final Girl, once it's all said and done, like I have a huge sprawling set of components out and about, but kind of the action is very small. It's very limited for your map, and that's kind of cool. That kind of goes with that, the VHS vibes of it, and letting you do more of the work when it comes to some of the things that are scary. And again, that they don't really scare me during, but thinking about it and all that does add to the fear. But for Cthulhu Death May Die, bigger, obviously. You have minis, which are humongous minis. You have like larger than life action, and in Final Girl, there's like spurts. In mine, it was definitely cascading failure. It was just like bad upon bad, to the point where there wasn't much I could do, and I was just trying to like string it along. Where in Cthulhu Death May Die, like bad things happen, but you get more powers, and again, that kind of happens in Final Girl. I would say definitely not to the same degree, and I think just kind of like some of the pulpy zaniness that you've heard people talk about when it comes to Cthulhu Death May Die, which designed by Rob Daviau, Eric Lang, and some of the new stuff being designed by Marco Portugal, with a handful of artists. So you can check out that game and see all the contributions there. Oh, that threw me off. But that feel definitely wants me to want to share it more. And I think in that regard, just kind of going back to Final Girl makes it succeed a lot. Like I want that to be a solo game. Could I, ask somebody to co-op it with me and just like make decisions? Yeah, sure. And I think that would be perfectly fine too. But I think the play experience is suited well to it. And the play experience of solo Cthulhu Death May Die is fine, but that's not the way that I want to interact with it overall, especially knowing that there is the option for playing it with other people. So yeah, I think I got through those particular thoughts succinctly enough. And now we're going to flip to a game that can be played with 2 to 3 players, but I primarily play it solo, and that is Dustin Dobson's Skulls of Sedlick with artist Marty Cobb and Marianne Wage. Definitely going to mispronounce names when I start doing this, but I'll read the little flavor text in the rule book for Skulls of Sedlick. Sedlick Ossuary, 16th century AD. The Black Plague and Hussite Wars have overcrowded the graveyard. Help the bone collector, a half-blind monk, by exhuming graves and arranging the skulls inside the crypt. So, getting out of the way, obviously, that idea of graves, exhuming graves, and all that, and crypts. Did I say crypts? Probably said crypts. Is like overcrowded graveyards. Subject matter, yeah, it hits on the scary, it hits on the Halloween and fears. And kind of coincidentally, I just listened to a podcast recommended by Alicia Giroux, a previous guest, and that was the Midnight Library podcast. And the very first episode on that, I don't actually have it up, was about like underwater crypts. I don't know. I definitely something that I have now heard, or underground, not underwater. I think they maybe come on underwater, which was like the problem of the episode. I don't know. I listened to that one like a month ago now. Brain's definitely not firing on all cylinders from the memory department, but yeah, there's a lot going on there. And this is one that I played with two, and I think it's fine. I think it's a good game. But I've definitely preferred my solo plays. There are times where I really dive into playing these button-shy games and just kind of like, binging them for a while. And like binging them and not wanting to get rid of them. Like there are certain games, and I'll get to one in just a second, where I like binge and binge. I'm like, okay, I'm done. That's particularly in the roll and write camp. But when it comes to these kind of like puzzly button-shy games, I have like no desire to get rid of them. On the complete contrary, I want to keep them. In this game, you're drafting cards, and it is done differently in the solo mode compared to the multiplayer mode. And you're trying to like work on adjacencies and hit different scoring things. And then in the different like expansions, you have these different like formations where you're organizing these skulls, which obviously makes the ability to like have adjacencies and different levels to your placements a little bit different. I hope that that makes some sense. But basically, you're trying to place skulls next to other skulls and think about the idea of levels and adjacencies and which ones score in different ways. That's the short of it. And I'm a big fan. In terms of like ebbs and flows, I think I wind up preferring Sprawlopolis, which is a game I've previously talked about, and Rove, another game that I've previously talked about, to this one. But this is, I think, at least right now, it's kind of in my number three spot for button shy games. Big fan. If you're gonna dive into some of the subject matter or way that bodies have been buried throughout history, I'm sure you're going to uncover all sorts of like weird and creepy stuff. Maybe I'll actually do that more and pay more attention to it and properly creep myself out, which again doesn't take too much to do. But good game. Not scary. Halloweeny in vibes enough. Kind of back to a very quick component complaint, and I guess at this point in time, I think I have four, at least four, maybe five skulls of Sedlick wallets. And again, when I was talking about this idea of like mixing and matching, being able to organize and sift through a significantly simpler game and find what you need to get a solo mode out of Skulls of Sedlak is not the end of the world, but I don't know. There was one point in time, I don't even remember which one it was. There are these particular, they're like extra, like mini expansions that come together. So there's like poets and knights or whatever. There's a, like a bunch of them, and I thought I had all of them, and then I had one of these expansions like referencing like one or two that I didn't have. So that was confusing. And then there was like a new expansion collection that came out, and I wound up using that to get the old ones that I didn't have. So then I took a pause from playing it just due to the fact that it wasn't even like a completionist thing. It's just like I played it a bunch, and there were some of these different cards or setups that I couldn't do, and I thought I had been able to do them. I just took a pause. So again, it is what it is, but yeah, that's my minor gripe. And I guess, just the overall sentiment for me and things that I'm thinking about is the ability to get things played, especially in times where there are other things. I don't know. I love my board games, but I was away to, in a sense, for too long, and it just like made me sad. And yeah, that's really about it. Okay, on to my final game, and this is a weird one. It's solo, so it works for a soloing. And I don't think that it is scary in setting, at the very least. And again, I don't think Skulls of Sedlak is particularly scary. Even Final Girl, the experience to me wasn't. It could be for others. And this was one where I think the experience has the ability to instill some, fear or anxiety in ways that you might not think about. And that is the game Mindspace, designed by Nao Shimamura and art by Julian Greep. And speaking of components and production on a really like positive side, this game is gorgeous. Like the art style and art direction from Julianne is amazing. Just kind of poking around and seeing other art from Julianne, looks like they contributed in Alice is Missing. So there are two artists in Alice is Missing, and if you have like seen that, you can know that that art style is really striking. Too, and here in Mindspace, cover cards, everything else, like Mindspace is mind blowing when it comes to that. When it comes to the game, I like it. I mentioned previously that when it comes to some of these roll and writes, I will play roll and writes like a lot, and I'll get burnt out and I'll be done with them, oftentimes selling them. And that's just kind of like my arc with them, and I've been completely fine with it. And Mindspace has kind of been on the fringe there. It's one where I haven't necessarily like binged it, but I've also been okay with thinking that I could get rid of it too. It might even currently be on my a potential BGG trade. Or trade collection, because there's another game that I was trying to trade for, and somebody wanted this one, but they didn't look at the trade. Life, I guess. And so that's the only reason it was on there. And again, I've been like ready to part with it, because like I like the game. I love the Tetromino feel. I think that's I pretty positive that in the episode with Luis Aguas Vivas, when we talked about Tetris-y games, this one came up then, and this is one that I actually been playing around then. and was enjoying and still enjoy. And I guess I'll just talk about it really, really quick. The short of it is you have this dry erase board, which is your brain, and or the inside of your brain, and you roll all of these different dice, and the dice, depending on the number, will line up in a column, and that column has a card with a polyomino piece on it, not tetromino, a polyomino piece on it. And depending on like what the color is and like where you put it on your brain, it's going to score in different ways. There are different scoring objectives that pop up, and you combine trying to get the scoring objectives with the particular scoring, color scoring rules as well. And there are ways that you can lose points by not having like pieces, squares filled in at the end of the game. Or if you don't have blue in enough sections, you might lose points and things like that. And I don't really even have a ton of, negative to say about the gameplay experience itself. I really like drawing shapes. I like puzzly little things, and this definitely checks both of those boxes. Speaking of like upgraded components, I have two sets of dice for this game. I have the deluxe one in the box and the non-deluxe one in a box where I have basically all of my non-deluxed all play components. So that's nice because I know that they're all in one spot. They're all play. They're all play. But you got an extra set of markers. Component complaint. I'm just gonna keep the complaints rolling. The dry erase-ness of the boards hasn't been super great. My purple markers are wind up being less visible, and then for some reason these less visible purple ones like hardly want to erase at all. But I've only played this game solo. There are enough components to play with five people, and I've used the same like mind maps over and over, so I just got these really kind of marker stained boards. So there's that. I think getting to the actual bit of like, what I said could be like a scary experience. Well, weird personal anecdote. I mentioned the caffeine craze, but no, a lot of the games that I've played of this have been, like midnight or 1 at night or something like that, and just kind of staying up and trying to get some of that stolen time to play games or watch a show or whatever. I think that's a thing. I know it's a thing. People do that. And then you're seeing all these cards that are like sympathy, stressed out, therapy, perfect day, passion project, security, with all of this very, personal and kind of, emotional art on it. I mean, depending on the day, depending on the time of day, whether it's, pushing 2 a.m. or whatever that might be, that can hit different. I feel like the game itself is what it is. It is this little puzzly thing. But the just like looking at the art of the cards, I mean, that's where like, I think theme, I usually try not to use that word, like does pop out. Like I don't know if the game itself is doing a ton. I think there are definitely flourishes, the back and the scoring conditions and the way that those are explained do a lot to like work towards this too, and the way that the scoring conditions work in the first place, makes sense as well, and it ties into it in a very like abstract way. But like the physical production and just thinking about it, I don't know. It's definitely like struck me more than like what I would expect. So that's about it. There was something else I was going to add, but for sake of time, I'm going to kind of chop that off. We'll leave it at that. I'm a fan of it, and I don't know. It feels like it works in this little set of three, four games, despite feeling quite a bit different tonally. Yeah. Okay. So some solo games, I definitely favorable on all of them. If you're not familiar with any of them, check them out. Even though I've kind of gone back and forth on my desire to keep Mindspace, it's had like a very profound impact on me in my plays with it, and I also have a feeling that I'm going to keep it. So that's about it. I think some of these thoughts tie together pretty well. I mean, like the cards in Mindspace really tied like some of my thoughts and like balance and things that I was talking about early on. And I think that those are some through lines with some of these other solo episodes. But it is time to wrap it up. And I'll just talk about the special surprise giveaway really quickly. I said earlier that I am asking you to trust me, so please trust me that you're going to get something cool if you sign up for it. It's going to be on a new Google form. I will put that at the top of this episode so you don't have to like look for it. Most of the time it's in the lower part with my contact information, which is another great plug. If you ever want to reach out to me or follow me or look at any other things that I'm doing on like TikTok, which right now, again, two videos only, go check out that stuff. But I would love to just like hear from you via email if you have any sorts of questions. But this giveaway link for the Google form will be at top. And I think I'll end it. I'm going to be going to PAX Unplugged. So let's just say I'll end this on the first episode that of the show that gets released after that. But I am going to be asking a couple questions. One of them is just going to be kind of like the mailbag question thing. So if you have like any questions for me or for the show or for anything in general, that's what I'm asking for. I don't know when that episode with the feedback might come, but that's what I'm looking for. There might be a couple other small things on there. That's kind of like the crux of it. Not a ton of feedbacky stuff. So there's that. All right. Probably a little bit longer than I thought. I ain't going back to say that it was too long, though. Thank you for hanging out with me. And I hope you're doing super well. Bye.
Intertextual Cardboard Experience, the most terrifying podcast about board games and any other text that they connect to. Thank you so much for choosing to spend your time here. Any further support, such as sharing the show with friends, following the page's socials in the episode description, writing a review, filling out the feedback form, or doing anything else you can think of is greatly appreciated. Keep playing, watching, reading, listening, experiencing.